Case of the day is Soltis against Costello.
May it please the court, counsel. Your Honor, this case is an appeal. Thank you, Your Honor. It's an appeal from the United States District Court for the Northern District of Indiana, Eastern Division, from our motion for a new trial following a jury verdict in which we were successful in the case, but they awarded us a total of $15,000 in an automobile accident. We are also appealing from the court's prior order, which in effect denied our motion to amend our complaint to add a claim for punitive damage in light of the fact that the plaintiff pled guilty.
Why did you attempt to add the complaint for punitive damages? Why was that necessary?
Your Honor, it was necessary in order to obtain additional damage after we learned that the individual defendant, Castillo, had pled guilty.
Why? You don't have to plead punitive damages in the complaint, do you?
Under Indiana law, you do.
Indiana law has nothing whatsoever to do with what you put in a complaint in federal court. That's governed by the federal rules of civil procedure.
The case, I agree with you, Your Honor, but
it's true that Rule 54C says that the prevailing party gets the relief to which he's entitled whether or not he put it in the pleadings. Now, Rule 9G says that, quote, items of special damage, close quote, have to be asked for in the pleadings. So my question is are punitive damages treated as items of special damages for purposes of Rule 9G?
I don't believe they are special damages. I think punitive damage is what it is.
You don't believe that. Is that because you've done the research or because you haven't done the research?
Well, it is because based on my knowledge and based on the law.
Have you researched the question?
No, Your Honor. I didn't recite that particular.
No, you made the assumption that punitive damages have to be asked for in the complaint, and the judge assumed that, and the defendants assumed that, and so far as I know, the assumption is wrong. But here we are, all operating on that assumption.
Yeah, well, yes, Your Honor. We went on to bring this to the court's attention. Now, we moved to amend after the defense made the admission. It then went on to exclude the fact that she was drunk or intoxicated under Indiana law.
Could I stop you for just an instance? Because the defendants did not answer the complaint until 4 months after the original trial date. Was that lapse brought to the district court's attention when the motions for sanctions and the motion to amend the complaint were being the court?
Your Honor, it was brought to the court's attention when the motion was moved for a default. What happened was this case was originally filed in this district. Then it was transferred, a change of venue to Indiana. At that point in time, I was the lawyer in this district. I was not admitted to practice in Indiana. That was a lapse in time for my admission and for the Lafayette to provide the electronic access number. Within that time, the defense changed their counsel. The assumption of the new defense counsel was that the complaint had already been answered, and they engaged in a discovery motions on that particular assumption. I could not, at the time, as counsel for the plaintiffs, assess the court system, since the entire Indiana court system was electronic. That hampered my ability to see whether or not the actual answer were filed. When that was then brought to my, when I was able to do so, I filed a motion for default, which was denied for non-compliance with certain rule, which is basically the notice rule. But the court below went on to allow the prior sanction, which was obtained essentially in violation of the rules of federal rules of civil procedure, which would allow them to only participate in discovery after they had answered. They didn't answer. They sought discovery. They received some discovery, but didn't receive some discovery. And then they went on to seek sanction, which was granted. Now, following that sanction, we were unable to present certain evidence, which if we had presented, would have been able to obtain additional monetary damage following our success in the trial. Then, in fact, during trial, which brought us to the next issue, the defense then took the position to advise the jury that we had, in fact, been bad, that they would like to hear the entire case and the entire argument and the entire evidence, but it would not because of the court prior ruling. And it's our position that we did timely object, and the court failed to rule. The court ruled sustaining the objection, but the defense again went on in its closing argument, made the same argument again, and suggested to the jury, despite all the evidence, bilateral hand fractures, suggested to the jury to award $5,000 apiece and $10,000 apiece. And it's our contention that the jury bought that argument, and the jury were biased by the comment that the court had ruled precluding us from tendering additional medical evidence. And with that, Your Honor, we ask that the decision below be reversed and that a new trial be ordered, allowing us to present the entire evidence to the juries. We'll reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Conover.
May it please the court. I represent the defendant, appellee Yvonne Costello. The appellant attempts to establish an abuse of discretion by claiming an unfair trial result. If you'll review the briefing at page 10, he indicates that it is clear that the unfair award was the result of prejudice, which must...
Do you know the answer to my question? Was it necessary to... Is it ever necessary in order to get punitive damages to ask for them specifically in the complaint?
Under 9C, we believe it would be, Your Honor, because...
9C has nothing to do with it. 9G is what requires items of special damage.
Your Honor, there
are punitive damages treated as items of special damage for purposes of Rule 9G?
They would be. In order to provide the proper notice under notice pleading...
What's the authority for that proposition?
Your Honor, I don't have a citation to that.
Any research on this question?
I have not, Your Honor. It wasn't raised in the briefing. However, Your Honor, there is
it's just a total puzzle to me why people are assuming that they have to be pleaded. I've done a little research. I found some appellate opinions saying that they need not be asked for, that they're not items of special damage. I found one opinion of the 11th Circuit which assumes, although it doesn't really hold, that they are, and that this appears to be, at least at the appellate level, a question no one has bothered to resolve. This
Right.
case might have been interesting had anybody addressed the question.
Well, Your Honor, had the notice pleading that had been filed as the complaint alleged special or punitive damages as one of the elements of damage asked for, it, first of all, it would require a separate burden of evidence. But secondly, it would have impact. Well, it's in Indiana. It's by clear and convincing evidence. It must be.
You're not in Indiana. You're in federal court.
The substantive law of Indiana with regard to punitive damages, we believe, would require clear and convincing evidence of willful and wanton misconduct.
What's the basis of that belief?
That's Indiana statutory provision.
Indiana can regulate its courts any way it wants. It can have any rules of pleading. It can have any rules of proof it wants. What is the basis of your belief that Indiana, that because clear and convincing evidence would be needed in Indiana, it's needed in federal court? Is there some holding to that effect that you're relying on?
Your Honor, it had been both the assumption at the district court level and in our prosecution of the case that Indiana statutory requirements provided the substantive law that would have been applicable to a punitive damages claim made by the plaintiffs.
Am I correct that you didn't file an answer until 4 months after the original trial date?
That is correct, Your Honor.
The plaintiffs could have moved to amend as of right any time before you filed your answer. So how could moving to amend a few weeks after you answered have prejudiced you?
Your Honor, the motion to amend came only after we had filed not only the contentions to be contained in the pretrial order, wherein we admitted liability for the accident in question, but also after the answer was indeed filed.
But you're not suggesting, surely, that if you had answered earlier, you would have answered differently. I mean, the fact of her liability didn't change just because she pled guilty or because you finally answered, did it?
Well, it creates exposure to the punitive damages count, which we were specifically trying to avoid by admitting liability for the accident.
Yeah, I mean, you had to do that. How could you lie? She'd been found guilty of DUI.
Well, simply answering and denying would not be a lie. What it would be is requiring them to meet their burden of proof on the issue.
It would be frivolous. It would be sanctionable.
It would be terrible.
A denial of something that is obviously true is sanctionable under Rule 37. It would jeopardize your professional standing as well as expose your client to financial sanctions.
Your Honor, evidence that was not presented in the trial but is familiar to me suggests that the plaintiffs may have had a small degree of comparative fault in the case. A denial seeking...
That's a different point.
Well, it certainly is, Your Honor. But the admission of liability was done in order to preclude, through the motion in limine that was filed, the relevance of the incidence of intoxication on behalf of the defendant.
Do you know if the district court was aware when it was taking the plaintiffs to task for being late with discovery? Was Magistrate Judge Radovich aware that you hadn't even filed an answer yet? I mean, your answer was filed 2 years after the complaint was filed.
Based on my familiarity with the file, I can confirm what opposing counsel stated. The fact was that the answer was prepared while the case was pending in the Northern District of Indiana, or in Illinois, but for reasons beyond my knowledge, was not filed after the transfer of the case.
You weren't the lawyer in Illinois.
I was not.
Yeah.
I was associated with the firm that had the Illinois office where the case was originally defended. Nonetheless, Magistrate Radovich found that the delay in filing the answer had no particular effect or deleterious effect based on the fact that everybody was on the same page, discovery was being conducted, and...
But it somehow, I don't know, there was something a little, maybe I'm wrong, but it to me there was something a little bit unfair about the fact that, you know, the plaintiffs were faulted for delays. They suffered terrible sanctions for those delays. But the defendant had failed to answer until 4 months after the original trial date.
Well, the answer may have focused the issues that should have been the subject of discovery, but that bears little relation in our estimate with these complete failure to answer interrogatories, provide document discovery, or disclose experts even after being granted extensions of time to do so.
It's pretty unusual, you know, I read through all of this, and it's pretty unusual to see a court say, well, this is unfair, but here it is.
Unfair? In what regard?
Well, I'd have to find it in here, but...
The judge said that had the case not been bungled by counsel, he essentially would have granted an editor,
right? Because
the verdict was irrationally low.
There
was no motion for an editor.
The district court was unwilling to substitute its opinion for those of the jury, and a careful examination of the order on the denying the motion for new trial places those comments in the background section of that opinion. This would suggest that it is simply being used as an example.
Here it is. I'm sorry. No, go ahead.
being used as an example of how the repeated procedural missteps by plaintiff's counsel resulted in what the court believed was a low verdict.
Yeah, because what the court says here is, opinion and order, although the award made to Pouch was not as unreasonable as Salt's recovery, it also was unfair. I mean, the judge says it's unfair.
We agree with the judge's analysis that based on the content of the motion for new trial, that he was not at liberty to grant additor under the facts that were presented to him and the pleadings presented to him. This notion that, and I'll try to quote opposing counsel from his statements, we should add this count for punitive damages in order to add additional damages. Indiana law is fairly clear, and the Supreme Court has ruled on this, that the purpose of punitive damages is not to compensate a plaintiff. It is a quasi-criminal proceeding that is designed to punish the defendant and deter the defendant and others similarly situated from other similar acts. So even if the relief requested by the appellant in this case is granted, we don't achieve the end that he seeks. The end that he seeks would be additional damages in the pockets of the plaintiffs. And I see my time is up. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Conover. Anything further, Mr. Molloy?
With respect to the point that the defense counsel made regarding that the fact that we did not comply with discovery, we believe that the rule of civil procedure requires that they should not have, in fact, participated in discovery without first filing an answer to the complaint. And we believe that had Judge Rodovic been fully aware of the fact that the complaint itself had not been answered, he would never have issued the type of sanction that he imposed on us in this case.
And that's why I asked you earlier, did you let Magistrate Judge Rodovic know, Judge, how can we do discovery? We don't even have an answer here.
We did not. Frankly, at that time, the belief was that somewhere in the midst in the court's record was the answer. We had a different lawyer here in the District Court of Illinois who had the case previously. I couldn't fully access the court documents through the electronic system, which they were filing in Indiana. So my belief then, which was wrong, I found out later was wrong, was that answer had been filed. It was subsequently when I went through the court record and found no answer, and I called counsel for the appellant and requested answer. He indicated to me that he would mail an answer. Evidently, when he found the answer, it was never filed. That was brought to my attention, and I filed a motion for default, practically bringing that to the court's attention, that they were in default, and all along they've participated in discovery without an answer being filed. They've sought and received enormous amount of sanction. We couldn't present medical evidence. Of course, it appears that the trial record was bundled by the plaintiff's counsel in this case. We don't have a trial. We don't have a medical record. We don't have medical doctors to testify because of the severity of the sanction imposed. And with that, Your Honor, we would ask that the order denying our motion for new trial be reversed, and that the order denying our motion to amend also be reversed, and the case be remanded for further proceeding, allowing us to disclose our expert and go on with a full trial. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess until next week.